I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on Armoring Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Hold on. Hold on. All right, now we can do radio. Joining me from Texas, where it's cooled off a little bit, is the man, the myth, the legend himself, Michael Christopher Musselman. What is up there, Mike?
Oh, man, right when you called, I just put my bag down in the closet. We just got walked through the front door.
Oh, no kidding. Because I texted him. Yeah. I texted him a bit ago. I didn't hear back from him. I said, hey, 11:17. Nothing. Crickets. Then I got an email. And he said, okay, at 11:19. So that's the way it worked. Give me your thoughts on this headline. Maddis to Spicer. I've killed people for a living. If you call me again, I'm going to effing send you to Afghanistan. Now, that comment is attributed to the Secretary of Defense after the former press secretary had made repeated requests to get him to go on shows like Face the Nation, Meet the Press, and whatnot. So you've been around in your capacity as a gunner. You've had the privilege of being around a lot of general officers. What probability do you assign to that quote having come out of his mouth?
I think that's BS, him. If someone told me that he actually said that, I would, it'd be like, come on, when did he think I'm drinking?
Yeah, I'd call him a liar.
Like,
I don't know where you're getting your information, but so Mike, describe when these general officers whether they be public or in public or private, and something controversial comes up. Describe the behavior that you see among those guys.
Well, it's that true professional behavior. This is not something that is so far from what his personality and who he is. It's not even close. But they attribute it because everybody's going to believe it because, it's Mad Dog Mattis.
Right.
The guy, man, it's crazy. No, he's not crazy. The guy is literally the smartest guy in the room. He doesn't say things like that for the effect that he doesn't have to. So,
I'll tell you what, he sure as hell doesn't say that stuff in front of people
like
that weasel. Okay, you don't exactly. And again, these guys have been doing this for so long. Do you think that that he doesn't think that maybe it's being recorded? Everything he says, they live in the most crystal clear fishbowl in the world, and so Mattis is going to
knock on them for being such politicians. At that point, they're more politicians. They know the right thing to say.
Right. So they're going to click off safe in front of somebody like Sean Spicer, and right.
Yeah.
Right.
Bullshit.
Right.
Come on.
Exactly.
Give me something else here,
You can do better than this. Come on.
Yeah. Like, come on. Seriously.
But it's just stupid.
I don't even bat an eye at it.
Yeah, if you see these guys in public and you watch, they know they're not a second that they're not on.
They're in the limelight. They know this.
Yeah, and it's like, Kelly said the president's an idiot. This is the worst job he's ever had. Like, Yeah, so who did he say that to?
Yeah, right.
He said that with a bunch of staffers in the room and blah, 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 like as he railed at his desk in the White House.
Yeah, after 42 years of service in this country, he says stupid things.
He says stupid things with people he doesn't know in the room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to anybody.
Yeah. All right. And if you believe that shit, I've got some beautiful swampland in Florida that I'd love to. It's oceanfront property. I'd love to sell you.
Yeah, oceanfront property in Tennessee.
There you
go.
Going cheap. The how far is the drive?
It took us like 4 hours almost on the dot.
Good driving, bad driving? You like to drive?
I don't like driving. That was a good drive. I mean, because like I said, you start out in the woods and then you come back into the plains and you're like, oh, it feels so good.
You were talking about something that Texas, California share some stuff in common, although not much. But one of the things they do is the diverse geography as you drive across the state. And Texas, man, you start in the west and it's like, actually the way west is near New Mexico, so you get some pretty drives out there, but then you go into flat west Texas. And then it changes so much as you move through the center of the state and then head to the east part of the state. It's pretty cool drive. And it takes a while. Texas is a big state too. Like Montana, man. Montana takes like, you could drive through Montana.
Texas is the biggest state down here in the lower 48, by the way.
Yeah, by the.
I mean, even if you're driving end to end in Montana, it's still. Is not the same as driving end-to-end in Texas.
Oh, man. It's
all
day
event.
You go
back again through Montana before you get to Texas.
Yeah, Montana. I used to, when you drive from North Dakota to California, which I've done a few times, you drive across Montana, and it takes forever. And then you hook down through Wyoming, and then pick up 15, like Wyoming, cut through Idaho, and then in northern Utah. You kind of skirt Yellowstone as you kind of drop down into 15. It's beautiful country up there. No doubt why Rob is up there. Probation man. No doubt why he's up there. But because it's beautiful.
Right.
It's beautiful. But no, big state. Okay, I'm gonna give you a quiz. We're gonna see how smart you are. And don't look it up.
Oh God, I'm tired, man. Go ahead.
We'll see how smart you are. Largest states in the lower 48, because Alaska is like its own nation up there.
Alaska is the largest. It's the largest. So,
the biggest
state
number one. By size. Okay. All right. What's number two?
Texas.
What's number three?
That'd be California.
You're reading it. You know what?
No, I know these. You're not.
Okay. What's number four?
That'd be Montana.
What's number five? If you get number five, you're going to go in timeout.
No, it's not fair because I know these, man. I know like the top 10.
Okay, what's number five?
New Mexico, Arizona.
Piece of shit.
No, I'm not reading this. Arizona, Nevada. They're all in the southern part.
Sure, of course.
You know, so it's, Arizona, and then Nevada. This is where I, no, wait.
You know,
so it's.
Think hard.
Those three right there. Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada. Is Arizona bigger than Nevada?
Of course it is.
Okay. Then I would say, I want to say Oregon, but I don't think that's right. But I know Oregon's in the top 10.
It's not Oregon. It's not Oregon. Number 8 is
not Oregon.
Oregon. No.
Wait, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
I won't. I know you'll figure this out. I know this will come to you.
No, because no state, it's easy, Mac, because there's no state east of the Mississippi. And it's no state north of Colorado. Yeah, it's Colorado, and then Oregon, and then Wyoming.
Exactly. You named all. You named the top ten. Now,
well, Mac,
who?
All
okay,
those states
hold on, hold on, hold on. Who would know that? Who would know the order of that? Okay, and then Michigan, Minnesota, and Utah, and let's just throw Kansas, yeah. Nebraska, South Dakota in there.
No, they're not, because those are, well, the Dakotas are not big at all, and Kansas is east of the Mississippi. Minnesota is not a big state. Michigan's east of the Mississippi. So the what I was taught in school a long time ago, like I said, Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, blue, indigo, violet, is what? The colors of the spectrum, and the top 10 largest states are all west of the Mississippi, and they don't include Utah, Idaho, and Washington. So, I mean, it's like, that's okay. So it's the others other than those three. Utah, Idaho, and Washington, the top three northern states up there. And I never thought of Dakotas being east, west of Mississippi, but I guess they are, but they're small.
Yeah, I didn't really, so you've studied the map? Extensively.
Yeah, I was pretty good in geography, man. Geography was a good.
Yeah, I was good. It starts with state capitals and the states. Okay, here's kind of some trivia for you. How many of the top five can you fit inside of Alaska?
In the top five?
Yes.
You can't fit Texas. Well, you can fit them all inside Alaska.
Alaska is
665,000
square miles.
Square miles. But I know Texas is 268,000 square miles, so that's just under half.
Right. So you could dump on top of Texas. You could dump California into Alaska. Okay. And you still
have room for Montana and California.
That's how big Alaska is. Alaska's 17.5% of the U.S. landmass. Holy shit, man.
But the globe, when you look at maps and stuff, it never does it justice, you know?
Oh, no, because it's like, it's up there. They put it in that, like, that little square with that box with Hawaii, you know, Alaska and Hawaii. Yeah. And it's not the scale. It's like,
But here's the thing, that I read one time, like, how many eastern states, you can put all 13 colonies in Alaska, all the eastern seaboard, and, like, all the way back to, like, Ohio. So, like, basically the east coast and then in about 1,000 miles, you know, all in Alaska. I mean, like, that's huge, dude.
What? Have you been there?
Yeah. Alaska?
Yeah. Yes. I've never been. You know, obviously, I only stopped at the airport, you know, coming and going. Well,
hunted up there. Yeah. I've done lots of stuff.
I've heard it's absolutely breathtaking to go out off in nature up in Alaska. I heard that when I was at Fort Knox, there were guys there. What's the Army base up there? They'd have been stationed up there.
Shoot.
I can't remember what it is.
I don't know.
But the dudes that were stationed up there that were like hunters and fishermen, they would tell you these stories that you'd just sit there and go, you're lying, you're making that shit up. And they were like, no.
Right.
They're talking about like the sky was covered with this and like bald eagles or whatever, like walking down the interstate hitchhiking and shit like that. I mean, they tell you these crazy Alaska stories. And you're just like, is he lying? He's lying, isn't he? And they're like, no. Guys have been up there like, no, it's absolutely breathtaking. You know, because you think like, well, what was that like? They're like, yeah, being up stationed in Alaska, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So interesting. What about, more state trivia. What is the smallest state?
District of Columbia or Rhode Island?
Rhode Island. Rhode Island, 1,500 square miles. Next smallest, I would not have picked. So what is the 49th largest state in the nation?
The next smallest?
Yes. In fact, the next, two of the next four, two of the next three surprise me. The 49th.
What?
The second small.
Give me a hint of what.
I'm not.
But why would they surprise you?
I just thought another state was smaller than this state. Yeah.
Oh, so you're thinking like Connecticut, and you're like, ah.
Yeah, I think Connecticut's the second smallest state, but it's not.
It's not. Connecticut's a big state, man.
No, it's not. It's dinky. Come on, man. You got more land in Granbury County than Texas than Connecticut has.
No.
Okay.
I thought D.C. Well, D.C. doesn't count. Washington, D.C., I guess, doesn't count. But if you did, it would be the smallest.
Okay. But
they're all up there.
So give me the
Delaware would probably be the next.
Delaware is number 4. Delaware is number 49. Okay. Connecticut's 48. What's 47? And I would never have guessed this would be 47.
It's either going to be New Hampshire or Vermont.
New Jersey.
Oh, I forget about that state.
What? Yeah, I was like, New Jersey's that dinky? It's a little guy
state.
Yeah,
Vermont and New Hampshire are real close to size-wise.
Yeah, it's a little guy state.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. You're right.
Yeah,
I
would not have. Yeah. In my head, it would go Rhode Island. If I closed my eyes and I wasn't cheating like you are, I would go Rhode Island, Connecticut.
Delaware.
I wouldn't say Delaware. I wouldn't have said New Jersey either. I would have said Hawaii. Hawaii, dinky state, couple islands, shit like that. Interesting. Yeah, but Alaska. Yeah, so when you know, they throw Alaska on here, even on this map, it's about a third of the size of Texas. Okay, when it's three times the size of Texas. What, four times the size of Texas? Mm-hmm. I mean, Alaska is gigantic. What kind of hunting did you do? This is asked in an email. What kind of hunting did Gunner do up there? What'd you hunt in Alaska?
Caribou. I mean, everything. Caribou, wolf. What else? Just about everything. Yeah.
Did you helicopter out to someplace, do something cool like that, drive out?
Oh, no, it was plane, trains, and automobiles, man.
Was it?
Yeah. We flew in to the big airport, and then after that, we did stuff like, we flew in by a big plane. From a big plane, we flew in by a smaller plane. From a smaller plane, we flew in from a really smaller plane. and then from there, we took a boat, a bunch of boats, like a bunch of John boats, because we had to move everything. And then from there, we walked in.
Whoa, men's style. Nice.
Yeah.
And you had
and
all
then,
your...
Wait yeah. a minute,
so how did you... How long were you staying there? Did you have all your... Did you... So you man-packed all your shit?
Yeah, everything came in, man, by foot. So then we stayed there for about a week or so, a little bit longer, 10 days, I think.
So what happens, so now you kill a bunch of animals. You walked in. Mm-hmm. How do you get the animals out?
Well, because it was cold enough, so you dress them, you know, you field dress them. And then after that, we... you hang the meat, and then we pack the meat out.
You packed it out?
Yeah, I mean, it's not getting out anyway. UPS doesn't go through there. And then,
shit, man. How'd you, like...
So he put it in, like, a cheesecloth, you know, the bags.
Right.
And then...
But some of those, Mike, some of those animals are hundreds
and
of pounds,
we
right?
We got it into, I think it was Sugnac. And we got, once we got into Sugnac, we got it to, you know, put it in refrigeration. And then they butcher it. And then they packed it. And then they send it to your house frozen.
But you man-packed it out of there. That's men's town, man. That's legit.
Yeah,
that's legit.
It was like, I think 12 of us, and we had five boats full of gear. One boat, man, it was crazy. I wish I had a picture of it at all, like the tents and the camping. It was as high as if a person was standing on it. The boat was... like the water line, the river we were on. Thank God it was calm.
Hey,
the water line was like.
Do you remember a hay truck that a drone was watching in Afghanistan that had hay bales stacked like 180 feet high in the back?
Yeah, like on San Diego on I-5 on the weekends, you see the Mexican trucks used to pack with all the stuff.
All the stuff they buy at garage sales and shit. But this, we're working. All of a sudden, somebody says, "Holy shit, look at that!" And you look up, and here's this truck going down this dirt road, bouncing along, and this dude has hay stacked forever. And it's swaying back and forth. And somebody's like, this shit's so going over. And it doesn't go over. And for whatever reason, I don't know how long we watched it. And then the drone kept coming back to the truck. I don't know if we suspected them of doing something wrong or if they were just curious as we were. Like, and the thing never failed. It was like, you know what? Farmers, man. Farmers know how to do shit. And it was hilarious, though, to watch. Old truck down the road. Blue. Funny. So,
right.
Wait a minute. So you said that you got the final leg was in boats?
Yeah, well, the final leg to the plane was in boats. And that was a long trip. And some of the guys, it was funny because some of the guys, as we were boating out, a big herd of caribou, we still had some tags, and a big herd of caribou jumped in the river in front of us and was wading across. And they were in the middle of the river, so we shot. But a couple of guys shot some bulls on that out of that herd, and so their boat had to turn around and go back because they had to stay an extra day to dress out the animal and repack. And it's like, you fools, goodbye.
Exactly.
I'm not sticking around.
Exactly, man. See ya. Wouldn't want to be
ya. Yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm out of here, man. Like, you must really want that because I'm ready to go home. I've been to Alaska coming and going, but when we came back from Afghanistan, one of the great joys when we came back through Alaska, which is a much shorter trip, and it was awesome, is all of a sudden your cell phone comes on. You have cell service. You're like, oh, shit, cell service. We're home, boys. Yeah. You know, the simple pleasures in life. And I remember, you know, you land, you fire up your phone, and you're like, oh, man, I've got 4 bars. This is going to be good. So, no, simple pleasures right, in Alaska. The
simple pleasures.
Exactly. The, let's see. I was throwing salmon eggs at bald eagles when I was in Alaska last month fishing in Ketchikan. That's from F-18, man.
Oh, yeah?
Did you see many bald eagles?
Yeah, like crows, man. They're like garbage birds. It's kind of sad when you're up there. Because the bald eagles, you're walking down the street in a little Indian village, and the bald eagles are scavenging through trash cans. And it was like so majestic, this bird on there, everything. But yet, it's just like a freaking crow or a vulture up there. They don't even... You know, it's nothing. It has no majestic qualities to it when it's pulling trash out of a trash can.
you know, when you see them, like, for instance, they're in Minnesota, North Dakota area, but there's not very many of them. When you see one, I mean, it's like you see it.
No, Wisconsin, they're like crows in Wisconsin. Oh. Wisconsin, my dad's cabin. They're everywhere.
Yeah, in Northwest Minnesota, not so much. And when you see one, I mean, the wingspans are huge, man. I mean, they're big animals, and there's, like, no mistaking. Like, is that a falcon, or is that, that's a bald eagle, man? And, yeah, but I'm like, wow. And they're rare. In Northwest Minnesota, you see one, you know, driving down the road, because you can see forever in flat land, right? You look up, you're like, whoa, check it out, a bald eagle. And, but, yeah, I've never, yeah, that'd be crazy to see them rolling around like crows. The email question. Mac, what kind of rifle did Gunner take with him on that trip?
On that trip, I was shooting a 6.5 Grendel in on an AR platform.
Whoa.
So it looked like an assault rifle, but it was shooting a 6.5 Grendel.
There you have it. What is the ammunition 6.5? Is that what you meant?
The 6.5 Grendel.
Okay. Is that your, do you have so many weapons? You have a weapon for everything. Is there a weapon that you don't have? Is there like a weapon gap?
That I want?
In your armory? When we talk about want, you have a few vanity wants that you want. They're really not requirements. But, you know, like when you talk about like, well, you know, at home, you know, I'll have this kind of pistol with this kind of ammunition. When I get in the car, I grab this one. I have this one. When I'm in, when I walk in and I eat at Cracker Barrel, I have this one. When I go into Ruth Chris, I have this one. So you have a whole different, like for every different kind of fast food and fine dining, you have different weapons. Is there any gap in the armory that you feel you have to address?
No, I'm good. Why is that funny?
I was just wondering what you were. I mean, what, a year ago you wanted the 45 made from the Meteor. That was on your list.
Well, that's like a dream. Yeah, that's a dream. Like, come on, $4.5 million. Come on. There's need to have and want, nice to have and want need to or want, you know. And that's kind of a, I would like to have, if anybody's listening that needs to do a $4.5 million write-off, I'm your man.
There you go. All right. Yesterday, let's see, September 2018. I saw a number.
What?
I saw a number yesterday, and the Red Sox were down, 6-0 in the ninth inning?
Oh, that was just the last game. Yeah, the last, games.
They were down 8-2 in the ninth inning. And the number that I saw was something like teams trailing by 6 or more runs in the ninth inning were 0-730 before yesterday.
Right.
Before yesterday. Okay. And the Red Sox came back and won. Okay, so let me just tell you, do you know what that means?
What do you mean?
It means they're not going to win the World Series. Too much is going right.
And I told you just a long time ago that I was really nervous. I was like, oh my God.
Okay, when they start
normally when they play this good, that means the postseason is going to be horrible.
Yeah, so
when they
play swept.
Kind of good, like right now where the Yankees are sitting, that's where I was hoping the Red Sox would be sitting. Because the Yankees are hungry.
Oh, and they're getting their ass kicked in Oakland. But I saw this yesterday. I was like, are you kidding me? When you start doing things of biblical proportion, at some point God is going to rein that in. Like, boys, you better enjoy this while you can, because at some point this thing's flipping upside down on us. And I wish I could, I can't find the number right now, but I saw it yesterday. It made me laugh. 0-754 in games trailing by six or more runs in the ninth inning until yesterday when the Red Sox came back and won. That's just crazy. That's just crazy stuff. Here's another gun question. Mac, I'm curious, when you do hunt in Alaska, is there anything that you have to do different relative to weapons, ammunition, scopes, because it is so far north? Never thought about that. Mike, anything?
No, you don't have to do anything. You just make sure that you don't take heavy guns with you. You'll never take heavy guns to Alaska.
Because you're walking.
Because you're going to be walking, boys and girls.
Here's another... it's a hunting gear question. It's entitled Hunting Gear. Mac, you need to do a hunting gear segment, and I'll ask the first question. What cool things has the gunner seen lately relative to existing outdoors that are changes from even what he experienced while on active duty? So there's some pretty incredible stuff that you can buy relative to outdoor living now. Pretty amazing. What have you seen that has caught your eye?
Nothing really. I mean, nothing new. One of the things my go-to all the time when I'm out doing this type of stuff is just my JetBoil stove.
What's your JetBoil? Sounds like something that boils water fast.
Yeah, JetBoil.
What is it? Describe it to me.
It's a stove that boils like a jet. I mean,
this is the equivalent of the Jado bottles on the Ford Fairlane that you were describing the other day.
Yeah, it's what you, it's just a big mug type thing.
Yeah,
it looks like a battle mug without the Picatinny rails. It's that big, and then everything goes inside the mug. You know, the stand, the burner, the fuel can. So it's just like carrying a big mug, and that's your whole stove. You can cook in it. You can do everything you want. But yeah,
that's cool.
Always, I like the JetBoils. I used to have a Primus multi-fuel stove that would burn any kind of flammable diesel fuel, JP8, DF2, JP5.
Nuclear fuel?
Unleaded gasoline.
Like if you like stole a rod out of San Onofre,
you don't need a stove to cook with plutonium. You just put it on top of the rod. It'll cook it.
Nice.
I wouldn't need it, but.
Unless you were really hungry, right?
No, because that would be still your last meal, man. I mean, the radioactive isotopes that are coming out of that thing into your food, you just consumed it.
Hey, do you remember years ago, and not that long ago, you would have been living in San Clemente, because I was living in San Clemente. Do you remember the sirens going off at the nuclear facility?
Well, they used to test it the first Wednesday.
Non-testing.
Of the month.
Non-testing events. Do you remember that? And before they closed it down, before they shut it down, they had some issues at the nuclear site. And they release some steam, but you don't know. You just hear the siren going off, and you look like, wait a minute. It's not, the first Tuesday or Wednesday? It's like the middle of the month. Like, oh, I guess we're all breathing plutonium now. This is awesome. And do you remember that or no? Maybe you weren't around.
No, I don't remember that.
That was always, it's a good feeling when the sirens are going off in the middle of the month at your local nuclear facility. And then, you know what? Then they close the son of a bitch down. Nothing. It's hood ornament now. Here's another question. Can we talk about boots? What kind of boots does a gunner wear when he goes hunting? Yeah, let's talk about boots. Boots are a big deal. What kind do you wear when you go hunting?
Yeah, I wear... Let me tell you what they are, because I just saw them. They're the big ones.
The big boots?
Yeah, they're walking through the closet. Just before I left, I put some mink oil on them.
Whoa.
They are, I think they're Cabela's. Got them at Cabela's. Yeah, they're kind of the mountain high top. That's a big vacuum sole on them. They got the.
What are you burping and hiccuping for? What's going on with you?
Oh, that was a hiccup. I can't burp.
You can't burp? What do you mean?
Well, because of my stomach surgery that I had.
You can't burp?
No, I can only hiccup. Yeah, these are Cabela's. I don't know what kind of brand they are. I mean, what model they are. But
what are they made of? What are they made out of?
Oh, they're leather, man. They're big. I'll send you a picture of it. But it's a big, comfortable, lined, Gore-Tex lined, insulated. You can click skis to them if you have to.
Whoa. How about that?
Yeah. Well, the Telemark skis, like cross-country skis. Oh,
right. Here's an email for you. Again, I rail on your ass clowns on a regular basis, but I didn't know you could fit that many states into Alaska.
You can fit a lot of states into Alaska. Big state.
Who knew that? That's amazing. I didn't realize it was that big. I knew it was big, but I thought it was like a little bit bigger than Texas.
Oh, not a little bit bigger.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you look at this number, so Texas is
a third.
Yeah, you could
roughly
fit,
a third.
Yeah, a little bit bigger than a third. Texas, 268,000 square miles. So you could fit Texas 2.5 times into Alaska. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the name of that tune. Yeah, see? You know, if you listen to Almarine Radio and you open up your ears and your heart, you can learn here. You can learn.
We're not just a bunch of idiots running around. Sometimes we are. Most of the time, actually, we probably are. But every now and then, when you listen, we give you a tidbit of information. That doesn't mean anything, but you're a little bit smarter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could be smarter. Yeah, as my dad used to say, the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while. That's right.
That's what happens.
All right, now that you're home, what do you, anything going on? You're gonna take a nap? You're gonna lay down, relax a little bit? Cause I always feel, always feel good to come home. Tell everybody, it wasn't your uncle, right? It was your cousin?
Yeah. No, it was my uncle.
And he's a veteran, yes?
Yeah, Army vet.
Army vet, and he passed away, and so you've been over in the Houston area with them, yeah?
Just north of it. Well, actually north of it, Lupton.
Lupton,
and,
Texas.
Met his wife and that a family down there, and let me tell you, again, a testimony to small-town America, some of the greatest Americans, you know, out there. These guys are a great group of people, you know, as good as they get, that group of people down there in Lufkin. And instantly, you know, you just feel instantly connected to them, and they're the kind of people that would, you know, again, give you the shirt off their back. Just good people. So that was good.
Well, welcome home. Here's one email. Mac, I want to hear what the gunner has to say relative to that op-ed in the New York Times. So did you hear?
Oh, no.
Let me just ask you this.
Oh, this is the fake article, yeah, written by
the anonymous
the New York
article,
Times,
yeah. Posed
as a
senior Trump administration official.
Which is bullshit, by the way, guys. Come on.
We've all worked for people that we didn't particularly care for, that had leadership styles
we didn't
particularly care for. And so, to me, what the article says is what? I think Trump's an asshole, you know, and I push back on things I don't like. So, again, other than, you know, it being written by a senior Trump administration, there's a line, though, that if you can't live up to, then you took an oath. You resign.
You walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah, walk away.
And then, but short of that, as long as you're not morally offended, I guess, you know, as a staff officer or a staff person working for somebody whose leadership style you don't particularly care for, you know, so I guess you get to vent your spleen because you think the guy's an asshole.
It's the whole greater good thing, and that's why I think it's a bullshit article that it was not written by, you know, and this is going to be one of those debates for a while. If it is written by a senior administrator or a staff guy from his Trump team, then you know what? Then we're in worse shape than I thought we were really
in. I absolutely agree.
If it's written by the news to stir up, you know, more issues, that has a more, it's plausible to me. Anything they can do, man.
All right, man. Welcome home. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. I'll see you there.
There you have it. The one and only. The outdoorsman. Michael Musselman. This is Duncan Hunter talking about bouncing checks and being a $37,000... $30,000... I don't know why I can't talk today. $37,000 in overdraft charges.
There's nothing illegal about being poor. Okay. I don't think there's anything illegal about not having money in your bank account.
Wait a minute. Aren't you a congressman? Don't you make $174,000? Yeah, that would be true. And doesn't your wife, as the head of your campaign, receive another $30,000 in federal compensation? Yeah, in fact, that's true. So if I add those two together, that's $204,000, not to include any other grants or allowances that you receive. Yes. Is that true? Yes. So you're defining that as poor now?
There's nothing illegal about being poor. Okay? I don't think there's anything illegal about not having money in your bank account.
Right. Good luck to Duncan Hunter. He's a Marine, man. I'm pulling for him. But come on, man. Yeah. In the great tradition of ESPN. Come on. Come on, man. That'll do it. On a Thursday. My thanks to Gary Kling for putting me in touch with his brother, Chris Kling. You'll hear Chris. Chris is a professional interventionist, and his life story is crazy. Joins the Marine Corps, becomes a machine gunner, gets out, flounders. His journey through homelessness, becoming an intravenous drug user, and then out of that. Salvages his life. He's now a professional interventionist. Yeah, go figure, right? So you're going to hear his story, and you're going to hear him talk about intervention, and pretty interesting. And I think the hardest thing for families to do is, as he says in the interview, they know the right thing to do, they just won't do it, because it hurts, and it's scary. But the only thing that registers on people that are out of control is pain and misery. But if you continue to pay for their cell phone, give them money, all you do is subsidize their destructive behavior, alcohol, drugs, and the whole thing, you've got to let them go so they can experience the misery so they can come back. So don't touch that dial. I want to thank everybody who's shared the interview on Facebook, who's taken it and emailed it, and I would tell you that I just put the gospel of All Marine Radio, the All Marine Radio gospel of coexisting with PTSD up on Facebook. I'll bomb it out on Twitter here, but it's the blue collar mental health things that we know to be true. and we do all that so we can live the high life. Yeah. So do me a favor, share this stuff. It stuns me on a daily basis. I'll tell you a quick story. So the Chris Kling interview is taped, is recorded. So as it's playing, I'm, you know, putting stuff on the web, putting the first two segments on the website. I'm getting the shell ready for his audio. You know, it's what I do. So one of my Marines from when I was company commander, he messages me on Facebook Messenger, and he said, "Hey, sir, I listened to the interview yesterday with your sister, you know," and essentially says, "Wow." He says, "But the part you talked about relative to the helicopter crash is the first time I've heard anybody talk about it since the day it happened. I talked about another Marine in our company that has since passed away, but the only person I've ever talked about that with is my therapist. And listening to that helped me yesterday." And so we started chatting about it. I sent him a picture of that Marine, one of the two Marines that were killed that we were trying to save, and he was a part of it. And when I get off, I told him, I said, "You know, I called his dad 9 years after it happened, because I know that kid, you know, Peter Bazzarini, part of my life, knew him for 15 minutes, and to this day, a part of my life." That day, that was the day that my gunny walks up and says, "You'll never get over this." And specifically what he was talking about is trying to save Sergeant Bazzarini and a corporal by the name of Schultz, I think. And, you know, watching them struggle to live. And then hearing that they died en route to the hospital, and just feeling like a failure, like you didn't do enough. And so so I'm going to send him the letter that Sergeant Bazzarini's dad wrote me, saying that it was unbelievable to him how 9 years after it happened that you know, I still thought of him. And I called him to ask him, "Would you like to know what happened?" Because I, you know, he fought so hard to live, and he did everything that I told him to do, trying to live. And I said, "You know, I have two sons, and I just, if you don't want to talk about it, I understand. But I just wondered if you want to know what happened." And he told me his name is, I don't know if he's still alive today. It's going on 20 years. He said, "Mike, my name's Primo Bazzarini, and he was my only son. I'm a firefighter. I'm a retired firefighter in Connecticut, and I'd absolutely like to know what happened." And he didn't understand. He thought I was part of the squadron, and I was at the memorial service. I said, "No, I was in the field when they had that thing. I was on the ground when it happened. They crashed 50 meters from me." And with that, the phone went dead. He said, "You were there?" And I said, "Yeah. That was my company. I was a commanding officer of Alpha Company, 3rd Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion." And so we had this conversation, and he wrote me this letter. He was gonna drive it to North Dakota to give it to me. And I've never forgotten that, the undying love of a parent for their kids. And we become the stewards of them as leaders in the Marine Corps. And you personally have to be up to that. If you're not up to that kind of responsibility, then you don't belong anywhere near a leadership position in the Marine Corps, anywhere near it. And so, you know, he reached out today. And at the end of the conversation, he said, "Thanks, He said, what you said yesterday helped me. And so, relative to the interview with my sister yesterday that I've got so many emails about and so many people comment on Facebook, share that because you never know who's living with their own trauma and how you can impact their lives. So, with that said, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. The chef is going to join us. All Marine Radio will continue, and we'll do whatever we do tomorrow. So thanks again to everybody who shared that. Thank you. If you haven't shared it, grab it and share it. You never know whose life that you're going to impact by doing that. And I will tell you, there's very few feelings that are as satisfying as impacting somebody's life. So I'd encourage you to do it. And again, a lot of times you just don't know. So have a great day. We will be back here tomorrow on a Thursday. All Marine Radio is over and out.